20 minutes a day, 365 days a year. This is the Pack-A-Day Podcast.
What's going on, Packers fans? Welcome into an all-new episode of the Pack-A-Day Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Herman. You can follow me on Twitter at Andy Herman NFL. It is Wednesday for you, which is not normally our usual Justice Mosqueda day, but with me being on vacation and being a slacker and everything being out of order and out of sync, we get it on Wednesday today. Justice, of course, you can follow on social media at JUMOSQ over at packingcompany.com. Justice, great to be chatting with you. How are you doing, my friend?
Doing great. Doing peachy. Got back from baby shower number two for the sister-in-law.
Love it.
Yeah, it's hot, but it's not too hot. Can't complain.
Did I see you in some social media picture? And maybe I was looking back a little bit, so maybe it was further back. Did I see you driving towards some mountains or something? I saw some gorgeous scenery, I thought.
Yeah, up there is where I grew up. So yeah, grew up in the mountains in Oregon, middle of nowhere. Yeah.
Gorgeous. Looked absolutely cool.
Looks great.
Yeah, well, I hope you guys
enjoy. Not many jobs. That's why I left. So,
yeah, I can understand that. Although, you know, now you can just work from anywhere. You know, I don't know. You actually have to, if you want to cover the Packers, you have to be within a certain mile radius of Lambeau Field. I don't know if you know that.
my issue is the Wi-Fi signals out there. I got two custom good internet.
It is crazy how when you're looking for places now, how like checking the cell phone signal and what type of internet you can get, it's kind of like it's a big deal. You have to make sure that you are in a zone that you get good cell service, good Wi-Fi, etc. Otherwise, it can be a problem real fast.
Sure can. Yeah, I mean, if you look at the coverage maps and stuff like that, out west is way different than east of the Mississippi in terms of even just cell phone coverage and stuff. I go to my grandma's house. I can't. I don't know, like nukes might have been set off. I will get no phone alerts. Like,
hopefully that's not the case. All right, well, we got a lot to get into, per usual. I have some fun things I want to discuss. I don't know if you know this. Most Packer fans do not know this. TJ Watt could have actually been a Green Bay Packer when they selected Kevin King. It never gets talked about. But I know you recently did a little bit of writing on TJ Watt and if the Packers could actually afford him or not. I thought it's just kind of an interesting way to kind of kick off this conversation, because I know that there is a subset of fans that is maybe holding out some sort of last gasp hope that a TJ Watt or a Trey Hendrickson or somebody like that could become a Green Bay Packer. We just saw some pretty big move. Jalen Ramsey gets moved. You know, it was a very interesting trade. Minka Fitzpatrick goes to the Dolphins. We saw a Darren Waller trade out of nowhere. So it's not completely unfathomable that something like that could happen this time of year. But I'll start with the article that you wrote. Number one, first and foremost, is it even feasible from a financial standpoint for the Packers to go out and get TJ Watt?
As of right now, it would be a pretty tight squeeze. The problem is when people look at salary cap numbers right now, they're looking at the 51 man like offseason hold, which is fine because that's what counts for the salary. Like, that's, you know, the NFLPA, when they send out blasters and stuff like that and they're doing the daily accounting, that's what matters right now, right? There's going to be some teams that if they had to do a 53 man roster, they'd be over the cap this second, right? So the way the NFL does it is because you want to have training camp and you want to have 90 guys at practice and all that stuff. Only the top 51 cap hits on your team count against your cap right now. And then obviously all 53 hit once cut down day happens. And then I think part of the thing that people don't understand is, like, if a player's on injured reserve, that counts against your cap. If you know, then use – so let's say – God forbid, first player that comes to my mind is Jordan Love, because this is his team, right? God forbid Jordan Love goes down. Just because he's on the injured reserve wouldn't then mean the Packers get a free roll on an extra roster spot. They then have to pay, you know, 54 guys, right? And as the season goes along, that number gets higher. And the entire practice squad counts against their against the salary cap and stuff like that too. I think once you account for, you know, basically like the wiggle room of like seven guys being on the injured reserve and then your practice squad, it becomes a really, you really got to thread it in if TJ yep. Watt is going to be making the money that he's making right now. And obviously he's looking for a raise. You could restructure that in some ways, right? I'm sure the Packers would ideally want to roll over some of the salary cap in the next year when they're going to be over the cap. So can it happen? If they really wanted it to, it could happen. But it would definitely take some moving around. I think they probably would do some salary conversions just to free up some immediate cap space to be able to do things like, you know, extend a Zach Tom and things like that in season so that they don't have to wait until, you know, the new league year for that to happen. Because by that point, I mean, he'll already be a free agent, right? Like, what's the point of him waiting? You're getting rid of any sort of that leverage. The point of taking early extensions is because we all know salaries are going up year over year, right? The point of taking that early extension is saying like, okay, I want the money and I don't want to put more risk on my body. Right, for yeah. the games. Well, once the games are over, what do we just go to market, right? I mean, yeah. you know you're going to get way more money if that's what you're looking for. So I think they would probably do some salary conversion stuff, which they've already done this year a little bit, just to be able to free up what they can do extension-wise if they did bring in TJ Watt.
It seems like there's a pretty big tell here already that they're not anticipating a move like this happening because – they were, you don't do the whole Jaire Alexander situation where they take money from, you know, basically, you know, next year, sorry, this year mm-hmm. And just eat it all right now. You would free that up and make it so that you had the cap space so you don't have to do other roster gymnastics to then open up this space. So it would seem to me that by doing that whole Jaire situation where they ate it all right now, they don't have anything like this at least in mind. Again, it's not that they couldn't do it. It's not that they couldn't change their mind. If the Steelers called and gave them a deal they couldn't refuse or something, they could always explore it. But it would seem like that's probably not in their intentions at the moment.
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you because there's really no motivation to do that. Because that money, basically what Green Bay did is they assumed all the dead cap from the Jaire contract this offseason so that they didn't have to split it up over this offseason, next offseason. Well, why does that matter? It doesn't really unless they wanted to spend that cap space immediately in 2025, right? Because the money that they're saving, they have the ability to roll it over to next year. So all it did was they essentially limited their short-term flexibility, and they did it on purpose. And that's a really interesting move. When we talked about this, when, you know, as soon as it happened, right, your question to me was like, why would they even do this? And I was like, the only thing I can think of is they're saying, don't look at the cap space. Don't look at it. We're not going to use it. Right. So I think that probably falls in line with not using the cap space to go after TJ Watt. I do know. So it's funny how these things get framed, right? Because, you know, we get the Adam Schefter stuff that's like, they're still not interested. They still don't want to make a move. They've talked to at least one team. I know they've talked to at least one team. It's not the Packers. They talked to at least one team. But the way it went down was kind of funny. It was basically like they named a price. The team hit the price compensation-wise for the draft pick. And then the Steelers were like, actually, the price is higher. Actually, never mind. But, I mean, this is a mistake teams do all the time. I mean, the fact – I mean, Trey Hendrickson did it too, right, where, like, it was, okay, Trey Hendrickson can get – this is what his agent told the Bengals and why the legwork was done on Hendrickson's side. Hendrickson's agent told the Bengals, we can get a first-round pick for Hendrickson. And the Bengals said, okay, go get a first-round pick. The problem is you talk to these teams. Hendrickson says, hey, I got a multi-year extension offer from, you know, Team X or Team Y. Like, I know the money is out there. By the way, we couldn't get that first-round pick that we were talking about. How about you settle for, like, two-thirds? And the Bengals are like, no. But then Hendrickson knows what his market value is, and everything blows up. So I don't know what type of turn this thing is going to take on the Watt end. The Steelers historically have been, you know, since COVID, they've spent the least amount of money on players, cash money on players than anyone. And Watt is asking for, you know, to be the highest paid non-quarterback in league history. And he's creeping up there age-wise, right? So I don't know what way this is going to turn, but I'm inclined to believe the Steelers aren't super interested, but they aren't, like, the door isn't closed on this thing. I don't believe that. And I guess we'll see where it ends up down the line.
I have a follow-up here that I think is an interesting one. If you were the Packers and you did make a move like this, and you could either have Trey Hendrickson or TJ Watt, who do you want? Let's assume the draft trade capital was similar enough to make it that it's mostly just which player you would prefer.
Yeah, I'd prefer TJ. I understand Hendrickson's got all these metrics and stuff, and, you know, he's supposed to be right up there with TJ Watt, Myles Garrett, and Michael Parsons and stuff like that. I still think they're a tier ahead of him. I think it could be a really good run defender, even in a 4-3 defense. I'm not worried about, you know, the transition to his hand in the dirt and stuff like that. There's not even a big gap in the age at this point, right? So, yeah, I think I'd rather go TJ. I'd probably pass on both. I think it's pretty bad business to give away draft picks to pay someone an extension. That's just my general thought.
Remarkably similar age. October 11th, 94 for TJ Watt. December 5th, 94 for Trey Hendrickson. We're talking a few months difference from one another. There's nothing that I can prove when I'm saying this of like, there's nothing scientific. I feel like Hendrickson might age a little bit better, meaning I don't trust Watt's recent injuries and or potential future injuries. I kind of feel like Hendrickson might be able to just be out there a little bit more, which is why I might lean Hendrickson a little bit more. If you told me they're both going to stay healthy, I would pretty clearly take TJ Watt, but I don't know. There's something about Watt's recent injury history that just gives me a little bit of cause for concern.
Yeah. I see your point. I think in general, I still value Watt's run defense a little bit more. Especially if you're going to bring him onto this team when Gary got a lot better at run defense last year. Right. But it's still only 1 year of it. We'll have to see if that's new Gary or if that was just something that happened for a season. You know, new defensive line coach, all that stuff. Who knows how things change? I would be pretty worried about Hendrickson's teeny tiny little arms out there holding the edge and then having Gary potentially opposite and playing, you know, a more potentially more penetrating role this year than holding his, you know, outside containment and stuff like that. I could see how the run defense could not be great, even though you spent all that money and all those assets on a pair of defensive ends. So that's the thing that would worry me. That's why I chose one.
Clearly the answer should just be just go trade for both. Just get both and then you don't have to worry about deciding which one that you want. I don't foresee any of this happening. Obviously, I expect Green Bay to more stand pat at this point. I expect Watt ultimately ends up a Steeler. Hendrickson ends up a Bengal. And it probably just ends that way. But I am intrigued. I am intrigued just from more of like where Watt and Hendrickson end up more than the Packers being involved. But I know a lot of people still have some level of hope out there that maybe something like that could happen. I wouldn't hold your breath, anyone out there that's hoping it too much. I just don't see Green Bay doing it at this point.
Yeah, I don't think so. Again, I think trades are harder to do closer to the regular season. You know, people have their ducks in order. You know, there's not that level of desperation that there is in the front of the offseason. So we'll see, but kind of doubt it.
If I can interest you in a TJ Watt or the Packers in a TJ Watt or Trey Hendrickson, let's talk about something a little bit more up Green Bay's alley. undrafted free agents. All right, so you wrote about undrafted free agents, and more specifically, which of the Packers' undrafted free agents has the best opportunity to make this Packers roster? I have three in mind. I'm curious where your head is at and who you think might be in play to actually make the 53 of this undrafted free agent class. We'll be right back. Hey friends, I'm so excited to tell you about this new game-changing product that I've been using before a big night out. It's called Pre-Alcohol. Now, ZBiotics Pre-Alcohol Prebiotic Drink is the world's first genetically engineered prebiotic. It was invented by PhD scientists to tackle rough mornings after drinking. Here's how it works. When you drink, alcohol gets converted into a toxic byproduct in the gut. It's a buildup of that byproduct, not dehydration, that's to blame for rough days after drinking. Pre-alcohol produces an enzyme to break this byproduct down, so just remember to make pre-alcohol your first drink of the night, to drink responsibly, and you'll feel your best tomorrow. Now listen, I get it. I was a bit skeptical about pre-alcohol initially myself, but I've now used it for a bachelor party, the college basketball tournament, and recently for a friend's epic 40th birthday party, and I'm telling you, it's the real deal. And guess what? Summer's here, which means more opportunities to celebrate the warm weather, and before that backyard barbecue brew, the glass of Pinot watching the sunset at the beach, or a cocktail by the campfire, do not forget your ZBiotics pre-alcohol. Drink one before drinking and wake up feeling great and ready to take on the next day and all that summer has to offer. So go to ZBiotics.com/packaday to learn more and get 15% off your first order when you use code packaday. ZBiotics is backed with a 100% money back guarantee, so if you're unsatisfied for any reason, they'll refund your money, no questions asked. Remember to head to ZBiotics.com/packaday and use code Packaday at checkout for 15% off. Make sure to support our sponsors and use that code PACKADAY.
I want to hear your three first.
Okay. Here are my three. The one is obvious, Nazir Stackhouse. I think he has a legitimate pathway to making it. I'm not saying he necessarily will or won't. I'm just saying I think there's a pathway there. The two other ones are a little bit more interesting. I'm going to go Tyler Cooper. This is more based upon how I like just enjoyed watching his tape. And if you keep 10 offensive linemen, like it's not absurd to think that one of those could be like a battle between Donovan Jennings and Tyler Cooper for like the 10th offensive line spot or something like that. And I think he's going to be the best of the undrafted free agent offensive linemen. So just by sheer numbers, if he would go out and have a good camp, good, preseason, I think that's within the realm of possibility. The other one, Taylor Algirsma. I'm going Algirsma. I think I think there could be a world in which he would show enough where Green Bay could get a little bit like, can we waive him? Can we get him through waivers and have him not get claimed? And if that were to be the case, if they were nervous about it and really liked him, I could see them being like, we're just keeping him as the number three QB and we'll figure out a different roster spot somewhere else. Don't expect it, but I think that's the avenue for it. So my three in no particular, well, I'll put Stackhouse as one, but then some form of Tyler Cooper and Taylor Algirsma after that.
The Algirsma one is interesting. So you think that he would be third quarterback, right? You don't expect him to beat out Malik Willis.
No, I mean, that would, right. If he beats out Malik Willis, then it's just, yeah, right. He obviously makes the team. And that would be a wild turn of events. I think that's probably too heavy, too fast. But I do think a world could exist where it just shows enough where Green Bay gets a little trigger happy of wanting to put him on waivers.
Yeah. I mean, he would have to show a hell of a lot this summer. I don't know what he's looked like live. I mean, you've seen him throw live.
But I've seen two plays, basically, of Taylor Algirsma. Both were touchdown passes. It was 7-on-7 in red zone. But both were like literal like bullet touchdown passes. But there's nothing that I have to be like, look at, he's going to be this great or anything like that. He looks the part. I don't know his mobility yet.
He's not a mobile guy. He's a little bit of a stick in the sand that way. But I mean, he's got arm talent. You can see it on that tape, even though he's basically playing a different sport. It looks all funky and stuff. But I got some of those college film and he's whipping it. Yeah. the skill players, I think it's going to be really hard. Outside of, you know, the potential for El Guerzma, right? Like running back, wide receiver. I think those rooms are just like pretty stacked right now. There's no undrafted tight end that we have, undrafted rookie, I should say, at least. I definitely think Cooper has the edge on the offensive lineman over Lippy, the NIU kid, just from, you know, how much they paid him and stuff like that, gave him that bonus.
Don't you dare forget Brant Banks.
I did forget Brant Banks a little bit. I think both Brant Banks and Lippy, if I remember right, are like on the CFL, what do you call it? It's basically like the tampering list that they have.
Yeah.
It's like teams get a call like 70 dibs or something like that. And they're two guys who have been claimed, I think by like Edmonton or something like that.
Okay.
I think offensive line is going to be a pretty tough room to get a win too. I mean, we're already seeing guys like, you know, Telfort and spacing on his name. Who's the Georgia State kid who got in the playoff game? Travis Glover.
Thank you, Glover.
We're already seeing them fall out of the lineups, right? And, you know, the Packers drafted more offensive linemen this offseason. So, like, they haven't even really gotten worked in. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see how that offensive line shakes out. I think it's going to be tough for him to make it. Stackhouse, I think, makes sense. What the hell are we going to do with this whole, like, Colby Wooden is going to be our backup nose tackle thing? I don't get that. I still think it's going to be one of the two Georgia kids is going to have to end up growing into that role. I know the Packers are super hesitant on letting rookies play. It seems like Matthew Golden, honestly, is on a pretty fast track as far as the rookies go, especially, you know, just how this has worked in Green Bay. So I'm not shocked that neither one of these defensive tackles has really gotten those first team reps or anything like that already, especially before like pads come on or anything. But I still expect one of the Georgia defensive tackles to make the team. So Stackhouse is definitely the one I've highlighted. Jamin Johnson, the linebacker out of Kentucky, he transferred from Georgia. He was really highly regarded. A lot of people thought that he was going to be a draft pick. Him and Stackhouse are probably, if you're just looking at, you know, draft pedigree, right? Pedigree coming through the draft cycle, those probably would have been the two to highlight. With that being said, seems like the Packers like the linebackers that they got. They added Welsh. You know, they already have a top 100 pick on the bench. And then Isaiah Simmons, they seem to be working him in camp and stuff like that too. So if Simmons is making this team, I think it gets real hard for Jamin Johnson to make this roster.
The only thing I'll say on Johnson really quick is we heard from Goody, I don't know if it was last year or the year before, of like how he wants to keep more inside linebackers from a special team standpoint. Yeah. If you told me they kept six linebackers and it came down to like Welch versus Johnson, it certainly would not be stunning by any stretch of the imagination if Jamin Johnson beat out Christian Welch. Like I don't think that's like some unfathomable idea. But getting to six linebackers with the roster the way that it's set up, I think is going to be difficult.
But are they going to get to six or are they going to get to 5.5? Is my big question, right? The Oklahoma State kid. Yep.
Yeah,
him and, you know, them talking about him being a D-end in passing situations and a Sam linebacker, you know, in base sets and stuff like that. I think that's where the math gets funky because I think that's why I think Simmons is such a key part, right? Because I don't think you're cutting the other four, right? You have Quay, you have McDuffie, you have Cooper, you have Hopper, right?
Yep.
You have the half of Colin Oliver. So Moore could just be 5.5, and that's one spot. So that could come down to, you know, Johnson, Simmons, and Welsh, right? If Simmons is running away with that, I mean, that just might be it. So
I still also wonder if in year two, at some point, if we don't get a little Kitano Oladapo linebacker look. They did it with Tariq Carpenter. Maybe. They did it with Raven Green. And if all of a sudden that's like another half, like you could, you basically have like almost right. like a, not exactly a platoon situation, but you've got one coming from defensive.
We can make the six linebacker in aggregate.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. Exactly. What we're missing on the six linebacker on the depth chart, we can make up in other spots. And who knows, maybe Bo Melton's next as well. But yeah, I do wonder if maybe there is something there where on earlier downs, they could put a Colin Oliver in if they wanted to. And on passing downs, if they lost somebody like a Cooper Okwai, they could maybe put Kitano Oladapo in that situation.
Yeah, I think so. These are the other two. These were the other guys that I thought you were going to name other than Nasir Stackhouse. Tyron Herring from Delaware and Jonathan Baldwin from UNLV. Again, we've talked about this a lot. The Packers cornerback depth after the first three guys, right? So, Hobbs, Keyshawn, and Carrington Valentine, it gets real thin. I think everyone, like anyone could get cut, anyone can make the team. It is wide open after those three, in my opinion. And that's why I think those guys are interesting. Baldwin was a guy who listed as a safety at UNLV. He played the slot. He didn't play safety. Came out. People evaluated him as a safety. He's listed as a corner. Seems like he's been playing corner a little bit more than he did at the college level. I think he would be an interesting guy just to kind of cover their butts at the nickel position, depending on how things shake out. If they really want to just say, like, Keyshawn is playing outside. If Keyshawn has a pulse, he's going to play outside. He's not going to play in the nickel this year. Right. Yep. And depending on how they want to treat it with ops, if they really. So, like, here's an example, right? Let's say they want their nickel set to be Bullard in the nickel and they want Hobbs and Nixon outside. I think in that scenario, a Baldwin makes a little bit more sense because you're one injury away from having to kick all sorts of stuff around. Right. If you really want to keep those guys on the outside, then. You got to have a backup nickel. You're not getting that at safety other than Bullard, and we're assuming that he's starting in this situation. So I can see a situation like that. Herring, I don't know much about. I'm going to be honest. He played at Delaware and Dartmouth. Haven't watched the film, but I do. He's a corner with a pulse.
Corner with a pulse is a good thing. Before I get to Herring, because I can find my notes here somewhere. Hold on, maybe I have it here. Yeah, I do have my notes here. But before I get to Herring, I had Baldwin as one of my biggest losers of minicamp because he did all individual work and team drills at safety. And that is a...
Really?
Yes, that is a massive switch from a opportunity to make the roster standpoint of from... one of the weakest positions from a depth standpoint on the team at corner to one of the deepest of like guys who could make the 53 at safety. So I had him as just like what a brutal situation going from an area where you have a real legitimate chance to maybe make the 53 to one where it seemingly is almost impossible. Now they have him still listed as a corner. It could easily be that for that, but remember too, this is the mini camp where they're putting Bo Melton out at cornerback, right? So like they needed corners. Like they were out of their seventh round pick. Micah Robinson was injured. Hobbs missed a day. Of course, obviously Jair wasn't there. It doesn't matter now, but Jair was gone at that point. They were missing multiple corners. Kalen King injured his elbow and was in the cast on the last day, was not there. I think even I want to say maybe Kamal hadn't even missed a day, but I could be misremembering that. But either way, like they needed corners and are putting Bo Melton out there and he's playing out his safety, individual and team drills at safety. So I'll be interested if he gets back at corner at some point. And I think maybe they just view him as like a Javon Bullard mold, kind of as you were saying earlier, of like safety, but we think he can play in the slot sort of thing. If that's where he could end up, there's still maybe more of an opportunity. But that was definitely one where that just the taste in my mouth it left of like, ooh, he's gonna have a tough time making it at safety. Herring's interesting. I liked him overall. Aggressive coming up as a tackler, which of course is good in this defense and in any defense. Let's see. He had a great open field tackle on first round pick Tyler Warren in 2023. Consistently around the ball at the catch point and battling for everything. Great instincts, good scheme fit. Multiple times he ran the route for the wide receiver. 6'1" in the height, played well. Only one penalty in 1,372 career snaps. 269 special team snaps, including 95 on kick coverage, 84 on punt return, and had a nice showing in the Shrine game. I thought his deep speed wasn't there, but what's new for the Packers cornerback group? Change of direction and hip fluidity was not ideal. Probably an outside corner only, lower level of competition and benefited from it. Man coverage is going to be an issue in the NFL and limited overall athletically. Thought he had some special team skills, strong practice squad candidate, really solid corner who has some athletic limitations, but fits into Jeff Hafley's scheme. That was my notes on Tyron Herring.
Sounds pretty much what I expected off of.
Yes.
High weight speed and adding him as a UDFA. Last guy, Kazir Brown, I think that's how you say his name, the corner turned safety. He's 230 pounds. I just think it's going to be hard to make this team as a safety, like we kind of talked about with the Baldwin thing. I mean, even if he's a really good special teamer, like, is he a better special teamer than, you know, Zane Anderson? Like, I kind of, you know, probably not. So. I think it's just going to be tough for these guys to make a team, especially when, you know, Ketan Oladapo played well last year. They're already still trying to figure out how to get Bullard on the field. Like, I don't think it's just not conducive at the safety position. I'm still going. I guess now that Baldwin is going to be playing safety, now that I know that, I guess Stackhouse and Herring are probably the two I would highlight. And then just like keeping in mind Jamon Johnson.
Yeah,
just because like he was supposed to be drafted, right? Those are probably the guys that I'm keeping in mind the most. But I do like your optimism about Elgersma. I hope he shows out this summer. That'll be at least keep some of these games entertaining.
For me, it's more of just like, is there an avenue to get there? Like, I'm not saying that the player is going to, but more of like, is there like space for it to happen? And I feel like at quarterback with the number three quarterback, an offensive line when you're maybe keeping 10. And Stackhouse, the nose tackle position is so thin. There's space for it if you can find a way to fill it. And again, I think probably the odds of that for maybe an Elgersma or even a Tyler Cooper, maybe not the greatest, but there's at least some wiggle room there if they can show that they're worth it in some way, shape, or form. All right, before we get to what I really want to have fun with here in just a second, you also wrote a very fun article, or at least asked the question, maybe more, I should say, which Packers player was best in video games? Which I love this question. You brought up a great one, and I have a story on that as well, but I'll let you start with who you kind of wrote about.
So I admitted that I put up numbers with Aaron Rodgers and JerMichael Finley in the day, but the real story, I think, was just using Seneca Wallace in Madden 2004. My pops was a Falcons fan, so I didn't get to use Michael Vick. So I got to use, you know, discount Michael Vick and Seneca Wallace, who, what, he played like, he had his like 10 snaps or whatever with the Packers before he went down with injury. So I got to count that one. I've used Malik Willis last time I played Madden, which wasn't that recently. I didn't buy it last year or anything. But yeah, I've been, buddy, that college football game came out at noon Eastern on Monday, and I could not wait to hop on.
How is it? Let me ask you that first.
It's pretty good. I have no idea how to get the offensive line to work, which always seems like the issue in video games. I'm just like, that guy is right there. Please go block him. But I guess all these things sound way easier.
So I have a similar Seneca Wallace story. This is from when I was in college. And Seneca Wallace was at Iowa State, right? I think that's, if I remember correctly. And I was a Madden player. I did not really play college football at all. I specifically played Madden, but I was a scrambling quarterback guy as well. Vic in 2002 or whatever that was when he was on the cover. But I could just run circles. People get so mad, just absolutely infuriated. And there's this guy in college who just bragged about how great he was at college football. And I'm like, yeah, I'm probably going to get beat here because I've basically never played the game before. And I'm like, well, if I'm going to do this, I'm at least going to take a mobile quarterback and immediately go to Seneca Wallace at Iowa State. And I must have beat him by like 30 points. Like I just absolutely roasted him and just was doing all this sort of stuff, running around with Seneca Wallace for days, just throwing the controller and stuff. It was absolutely amazing. So yeah, I have a very similar Seneca Wallace story. The only other one that comes to mind, I did see somebody put this in the comments of your post as well. I know this is going to be before a lot of people's time, but Bob Nelson, Tecmo Super Bowl, nose tackle, 3-4 defense, you could take that guy and he would just basically become the Hulk. And you would just take, you basically got to the point where in any gentleman's game of Tecmo Super Bowl, you wouldn't take the nose tackle because it was just too unfair. And Bob Nelson was like, for whatever reason, on steroids in this game. And he would just be able to, you'd immediately be able to blast this, like just run over the center and immediately get to the quarterback. If you played against a computer and just took Bob Nelson every play, it was a terrible Packers team. They had Sterling Sharp and not much else. You could end up with like 90 sacks with Bob Nelson. So I definitely have to go Bob Nelson with this one.
I've played like the Tecmo like emulators and stuff like that, but I've never actually played Tecmo. Tecmo came out basically 2 years before I was born. So apologies.
Tecmo or Tecmo Super Bowl? Big difference here, Justice.
Tecmo Super Bowl. Tecmo Super Bowl.
Okay, 91. Yeah, December 91.
Yep.
Okay. Well, you got it. There's your homework assignment. You got to go play Tecmo Super Bowl. To really get the true Packers experience, you have to play Tecmo Super Bowl with Bob Nelson and just murder everyone. And it's a team that I should have no chance against the Bills and 49ers and Dolphins of the world during that time frame. But you got Bob Nelson with a... I think it's like they have like what form they're in, and it's either like poor, fair, good, or like excellent. If you get Bob Nelson in excellent form, man, look the hell out. You are just going to crush whoever you're playing.
Sounds good. I'll get to it.
Last, maybe two, but for sure one. What I wanted to do, we're going to have a draft. All right, you and I, it's a battle. We're going to take five players apiece. Here's what we're going to do.
Okay.
Green Bay Packers, non-rookies, so it can be second year to whatever. Players who, from their PFF grade this past year, are going to take the biggest jump. So, for example, I'll take a random Packers player here. I'll take, we'll just do Malik Willis, since I don't think anyone's going to take Malik Willis. Malik Willis graded as a 70.3 this past year. So if I draft Malik Willis at 70.3, and he gets an 80.8 this year, I gain plus 10.5 points. Now, the caveat here is like, if somebody plays like 800 snaps and like they have like a 70 grade and this year they play like 100 and it's like a 99 or something, it has to be within reason. Otherwise that player's disqualified or whatever. You don't get the point. So it can't just be something like that. But assuming they play a similar or greater amount of snaps, the highest rate. Now, obviously, if you take somebody, Malik Willis and he went down 10 points, you're at a negative 10 for that player. So we're going to draft back and forth players that we think will take the biggest, I guess, PFF score jump. We're going to take them at their word that these are actually players that are improving. I will let you choose, because I'm a gentleman and a scholar. We'll snake this. If you'd like the first pick or the second and third picks. I did not research this ahead of time. All right. So I promise you, this is the first that Justice is learning of this. I did not go through the.
Yes, I promise.
Yes. This is the first that Justice learned. All I told him ahead of time is to have a PFF like premium up so we could go and review the scores. But I did not tell him, I did not research it ahead of time. So I would not have some huge advantage here. So. We'll be right back.
I think I would like to pick number one.
All right, go for it. Don't take my guy.
How confident are you that you know who number one is?
I just barely looked at a few of the offensive players just as we were talking here. So I just don't, I don't want you to take my guy. I think you might.
Quay Walker.
Oh, okay. You did not take my guy.
57.2.
He was at what, a 57.2?
Uh-huh. So he's among starters or among significant contributors, I'm going to throw out Wooden, Javon Bullard, McDuffie, Van Ness, and Agbare are the only guys who played, you know, in his ballpark, are still on the team and had a worse grade. I think Quay took the next step last year. I'm really excited about him and Cooper, you know, being able to pair up. And I think he's going to get paid. I think he's going to get $15 million a year. I just hope it's not 20 by the end of this thing. I know I'm kind of like the Quay apologist this offseason, but
I'm very geeked out now about my two selections. The first one was the one I thought you might take. I'm going Luke Musgrave, number one. He had a PFF grade of 47.1 this past year. So if he plays, I'm hoping that's at least around like a 60 at a much better as a rookie. I'm hoping for big things there. And if nothing else, my second pick is very on brand. And I'm never going to give up the stock. So I'm going to put my money where my mouth is. I'm going Dontavian Wicks as my second guy, who last year had a 65.1 grade. I think we can get that in the 77 range this year. So that I'm going to go with Musgrave and Wicks as my two.
The only thing with Musgrave, I was just like, is he going to play? Is he going to play enough for this to
That could be.
To matter? I am... I'm whiff casting with the fourth overall pick.
Okay.
Lucas Van Ness, 55.3.
I like this.
I need Lucas Van Ness to be good. I need you to be a starter. I'm hoping that you know, wrist hand injury, or it was a thumb, right? That thumb injury.
Yes, thumb injury.
Really did impact him last year. Same thing with Kenny's foot. And they have bounce back seasons this year and are healthy. And the health is the reason for their perceived declining play. I'm hoping Van Ness takes the next step.
Okay.
I need it. So give me the two defenders. You went offense twice. I went defense twice.
You got one.
Oh, I go pick? Again.
Yeah.
I forgot. It's snake order, fifth. Ooh. Give me Jordan Morgan.
Okay.
59.1. He never looked right with that shoulder. I think he's a lot better football player than that, even though he was working in and out of the rotation. I don't know how he's necessarily going to get on the field this year. I don't know if it's going to be at left tackle. I don't know if it's going to be at right guard. But I'll take my bet that he looks a whole lot better on the field than he did last season again, in part because of injury.
Yeah.
You know, sort of the Van Ness thing all over again.
All right, I'm taking Kenny Clark. You sold me on the 60.0 this past year. He's never been anywhere really in that range. I think he'll bounce back in some real way. I'll give you a teaser of who I was going to take here. I was going to take Bullard, but I'm sort of worried that he'll get nowhere near the 800 snaps that he got a season ago. That could ultimately, if you have just Valentine and Nixon and Hobbs in the slot and Williams and McKinney playing all the snaps, like, he could easily end up with like 400 or 500 snaps, and I wouldn't be super stunned there. So that could be a potential huge step back. All right. Let's do it. I'm gonna go Marshawn Lloyd. Marshawn Lloyd barely, I don't know, is that unfair because he barely played?
No. Count it. Call your shot.
Marshawn Lloyd, 53.3 grade. I think he'll certainly play more than he did a season ago. And I think that'll equate to something in the 70s. So I'm going Marshawn Lloyd here.
Here's me calling out the home run shot.
All right.
Tucker Kraft.
Oh.
68.2.
Oh, yeah, that's a really good
pick. He's one of the better tight ends in the league. I'm going Tucker Kraft. At some point, the Packers are going to figure out how to feed him. Right? At some point, Matt is going to be like, we got to start peppering this dude. And then, you know, his passing grades and stuff like that are going to go up just because he catches a bunch of plays that go for first downs. So, yeah, give me Tucker Kraft. I'll take him. My last pick. Gosh. I'm really debating between like three guys right now.
Okay.
Give me Devontae Wyatt. 67.9. His pass rush grade dipped a little bit relative to where it's been in the past. He's a good pass rusher. He's going to get more reps than ever this year as a three technique for this team. I think that'll help with Kenny kicking into the nose. If we get healthy Kenny, healthy LVN, right? I think, you know, should draw a lot of attention away from him, which means he gets more one-on-ones. He's basically playing in consecutive contract seasons the way that it's looking right now because they picked up that fifth-year option for him. I think there's motivation there. For whatever it's worth, the other two guys I would have picked or I was thinking of were Keyshawn and Carrington, both in the 64 to 65 range. Keyshawn's got to be able to catch one of these interceptions one time, right? And Carrington's got to be able to learn how to tackle someone. Just have two fatal flaws. And if they could fix those, you know, line through the roof.
I'm not taking either one. If I would have saw this one earlier, I would have taken him much earlier. I'm going Jordan Love. 75.8.
Oh.
75.8. He had 8 points better in 2023 and was injured all last year. He's going to be over 85. So I'm going to say he's going to go up at least 10 points this year. So I'm going Jordan Love as my fifth.
I think we did good. We got to like set a reminder like at midseason to revisit this and see how bad we were at predicting the future.
All right. So just to recap, Justice has got Quay Walker, LVN, Jordan Morgan, Tucker Kraft, and Devontae Wyatt. I've got Luke Musgrave, Dontavian Wicks, Kenny Clark, Marshawn Lloyd, and Jordan Love. We will see who ultimately we'll remember. Somebody will remind us if not. So everyone who's listening, remind us at like midway through the season and then at the end of season as well. If we forget, I'm sure we'll remember, but we'll look back at this and see who ultimately had the better increase in overall ratings. Hopefully there are increases in overall ratings and not yes. decreases. That would be very bad if it were not. All right. The very last thing before I get you out of here, I pitched this idea yesterday. I think I may have pitched it before in the, maybe it may have been on the radio show. I think it was the first time I pitched it on the podcast. Maybe it was to you. I forget who I talk to and what I talk about, but here's my dumb idea that I want to see the NFL and actually all the other leagues implement as well. Justice, I want a WWE style championship belt that you start, let's just say the Eagles get it to start this season. And then when they lose to a team in the regular season, that team is the owner of the belt. And then when some team beats them in the regular season, that team it's a traveling belt, whoever gets it. You might not get a championship match for years. It might be in the AFC for a while. You might not play the team in the AFC that owns the belt. It could be all of this, but I want a WWE and like the team that gets it at the end of the year, gets an extra fourth round pick. Every player on the team gets an extra $5,000. I don't care what it is. I want a championship belt that there's just like a random, like imagine like a random Thursday night game. And it's like, you know, Jaguars versus Chargers. And somehow the Chargers just beat the Chiefs the week before. And now we get to watch and see if the Jaguars can take the belt off of the Chargers. Like I'm all in. I want a WWE style traveling championship belt.
I'm 100% with you. Someone used to track this because okay. There's been, so I think there's been like five belts in like this hypothetical, because there are situations where the belt dies with a team that didn't make the playoffs at the end of the year. Right. So that's the only issue is you get, okay, that belt is dead. New belt gets minted in the Super Bowl because we have a playoffs that don't see, have
I want it regular season only. I want it regular season only. Okay. So playoffs, you're playing for a Super Bowl. Regular season only. So if the you know, if the Chargers end with it at the end of the year, they're the champions for whatever the WWE champions at the end of the year. And then the first team that plays the Chargers next year will get the opportunity to take it off of them.
Sounds good to me. Yeah. Let's do it. I mean, right. Anything to make these. You get 16 games during a week and you're like, what are the stakes here sometimes? Yeah. So yeah, throw in a belt, have some fun.
Yeah, I'm totally for it as well. I think NBA, if any league should do it, it's probably the NBA because they've got so many freaking meaningless games. Major League Baseball would be fun as well. So yeah, I WWE would like build the belt for, they already have NFL belts, the WWE. Yeah. You can make it work. All right, that's all I got for you, Justice. Anything else you wanted to go over before we get you out of here?
No, if you guys got any tips for the college football game, hit me up. I need as much help as I can get. I'm getting smoked out here.
What offense are you running?
I'm using a custom playbook. I'm doing like Rice has this weird thing where they have you could basically run like the flex bone, but out of like the pistol. So I've been doing that. It's like no tight ends on the field, but you got like three running backs. Basically, you have wing backs, all that stuff. When I played so the high school that I went to, my pops played through the system, all that stuff. They won, I think, 2 state championships running double tight, double wing. And so like the entire youth football apparatus at the time when I was growing up was still running double tight, double wing and all that stuff. So like, wing back counter and things like that. Like that stuff I read like the first like 5 years that I played football and things like that. So that was fun to kind of like revisit that stuff. I think a lot of it honestly translates to like the early McVay things that he was doing with some of his receivers and stuff like that too. So it's funny how football kind of comes back full circle. I'm trying to do that because I'm in a league where everyone was like, you got to pick 3-star programs or less. So I'm having to fight Alabama as like Mississippi State and stuff. And it is still not going well, even though I'm running the option. I'm making the right decisions, but my 11 are not the same 11 that Alabama gets to run out there. I need some help.
Welcome to real college football. There's some program that's got all 5-star players and you're running out there with 2-stars and it doesn't work the same.
Nope, it doesn't. And usually I'm on the Oregon side of this, so I don't feel bad. But when I'm Mississippi State, it's not feeling great.
You're getting the real college football experience. That's what it's like, is you're a mid-major program and you're just screwed before the season even starts. Welcome to college football. There's never been a better simulation of anything in the history of video games. Justice, I cannot thank you enough. Get your plugs in before I get you out of here.
ActoryPacketCompany.com. You can find me wherever you need to find me at JUMOSQ.
All right. Make sure to tell us in the comments who did the better job drafting. If you're Team Justice, put it in the comments. If you're Team Andy, I guess you can put it in the comments as well, or just
they're gonna be Team Andy. They don't like that I'm excited about Quay. I don't think that there's many Packers fans who like that about me.
Well, I think in the spirit of the competition here, like grabbing guys like LVN, Quay, well, maybe not Quay quite as much, but LVN, Jordan Morgan, I think to an extent Quay and Wyatt are like guys that are actually like haven't maybe shown that level yet and have the ability to step up and get to that level. I think I've taken some guys, maybe like Clark, Love, Wicks, Musgrave, who have all had better seasons 2 years ago and had down seasons last year. And I'm looking for more of a bounce back than a breakout. So I think you probably did it a little bit more in the spirit of like true breakout players. And I maybe gamified it a little bit more, but I still like my odds of kicking your ass. So that's the most important thing. I know. Follow him.
Remind me at midseason.
I know. We'll do it for sure. Follow him at JUMOSQ and, of course, acmepackingcompany.com. You can find me at Andy Herman NFL. That's going to do it for us today. But until next time, and as always, go Pack Go.